Our scripture today is from John chapter 12, verses 20 through 33. I'll be reading from the Message. There were some Greeks in town who had come up to worship at the feast. They approached Philip, who was from Bethsaida in Galilee. "Sir, we want to see Jesus. Can you help us?" Philip went and told Andrew. Andrew and Philip told Jesus. Jesus answered, "Time's up. The time has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Listen carefully. Unless a grain of wheat is buried in the ground, dead to the world, it is never any more than a grain of wheat. But if it is buried, it sprouts and reproduces itself many times over. In the same way, anyone who holds on to life just as it is destroys that life. But if you let it go, reckless in your love, you'll have it forever, real and eternal. If any of you wants to serve me, then follow me. Then you'll be where I am, ready to serve at a moment's notice. The Father will honor and reward anyone who serves me. Right now, I'm shaken. And what am I going to say? Father, get me out of this? No. This is why I came in the first place. I'll say, Father, put your glory on display. A voice came out of the sky. I have glorified it, and I'll glorify it again. The listening crowd said, Thunder. Others said, An angel spoke to him. Jesus said, The voice didn't come for me, but for you. At this moment, the world is in crisis. Now Satan, the ruler of this world, will be thrown out. And I, as I am lifted up from the earth, will attract everyone to me and gather them around me. He put it this way to show them how he was going to be put to death. This is the word of the Lord.
All right. Can you all hear me okay with this one, this mic? Yes? Great. So have you ever been in a situation where someone is requesting something and you want to say to them, are you sure you really want that? Maybe a lactose intolerant child is begging for that bowl of ice cream. Or your friend who has the worst dating track record has their heart set on someone and you both see all of those red flags, but they swear, this time it's different. So the Greeks really want to see Jesus. They were not given really any information about these particular Greeks, except that they were there to worship at the festival. So we know they're believers, perhaps converted fairly recently. But it sort of seems like there's some hesitation by Philip, because why did Philip have to talk to Andrew about it first and then proceed to tell Jesus together? Why would there be hesitation? Perhaps Philip thought, are you sure you really want to see Jesus? Do you know what you're signing up for? I don't know what their expectations of meeting Jesus was going to be like. Maybe they assumed it was going to be this pleasant time, a time to worship Jesus and maybe receive a blessing, or maybe it was going to be a laid-back conversation, perhaps with some wine, since they might have heard that Jesus likes to turn water into wine and thought, that sounds nice. Or maybe they had in mind they were going to get some teaching and lesson. Whatever they had assumed they were going to walk into, I doubt they thought, maybe at this time, Jesus is going to give us this whole monologue about predicting his death and how we need to get ready for it. What I found really fascinating about this text is somehow death and seeing Jesus is so intimately related. As we are in the season of Lent, we are faced with our own humanity and how fragile we are. We are reflective. We grieve with what is up ahead, holding, while trying to hold on to the hope that death does not win. To really see Jesus and the life that he led is not just to look at him. It's not even just believing in the things that he said and did. It's about accepting what he has asked of us, being a follower of Christ and participating in the work and community, not just being a spectator. Now you might be thinking, what does that even mean? Well, Jesus gave us this seed analogy for this one. Now, I am, full disclosure, I am not much of a green thumb. I have never even attempted to do any sort of gardening in my life, but I do know that you can't just have a seed hanging out. You can't just like lay it on your hand or just put it on some table and expect something to happen. Like, it won't grow. It won't do anything. Like, we got that base covered. But one thing I was curious about that I Googled is, if a seed has a little bit of damage, can it still grow? You know, go through that germination process. And guess what? As long as the seed is not completely broken, split, or in multiple pieces, it can. The seed has a coat that protects it, and while it's in that coat, it might look a little beaten up and rough around the edges, but it doesn't mean that seed is not good. Ooh. And if we are like seeds, we're probably all a little beaten up and rough around the edges before we are planted. And so with that knowledge, I understand Jesus' analogy a little bit more. Another thing about Jesus' analogy is he could have talked about any sort of seed. But he specifically talked about wheat, which makes flour and then produces bread. See, Jesus' teachings are very layered. Bread is kind of significant in the Bible. It's only mentioned 492 times, so it's like has a little bit of significance. But bread is really needed for substance, for survival. Bread draws us together in fellowship and community. We love sharing meals and breaking bread together. Proof? Well, what is the most attended thing at our church?
Potlucks.
I didn't even like pay her for that. She just knew that answer. And what is the most common thing everyone does in a community group together?
Eat.
Enough said. We have heard Jesus being the bread of life, and any time we partake in bread, he asks us to remember him. So let's go back to this germination process. Look at me using planting and gardening terms. There is so much risk involved. There is not 100% certainty the seed will grow and flourish. And while a seed that doesn't get planted cannot produce anything, at least the seed remains. You might be thinking, well, what good is a seed if it doesn't grow? Well, this mentality is how we live our life sometimes. We can be so nervous about taking risks because risks are uncomfortable. Risks require us to change. People get stuck in routines and they don't want to be because of it's stagnant, it's boring, dull, no longer a challenge, just kind of going through the motions. But on the other side of it, it's what we know. There's comfortability in the mundane routine. Sounds more appealing because it doesn't require change and sacrifice. So when a seed is planted for the first time, there's quite a bit of time you don't see anything. The seed takes a bit time adjusting to its new environment, and while it's buried in the dirt, the coat starts cracking open. And the seed is turning into something that is no longer a seed. the growth is slow and steady, and a lot is happening before it gets to the point of even being visible. And what do a lot of people say when they finally start seeing that planted sprout breaking through the soil? Finally, I thought the seed was a dud. It took forever to grow. But so much growth had already happened. Perhaps it had seemed dead to the world, as Jesus says here in our plant analogy. So I was weaving a little bit of seed germination process with human life examples. My hope is we are seeing some connection between Jesus's life and growing seed process and our lives all kind of blending threefold. If you're not seeing this connection yet, hopefully you will. We'll keep going. So in verse 25, it's my favorite verse. Anyone who holds on to life just as it is destroys that life. But if you let it go, reckless in your love, you will have it forever, real and eternal. In the same way a person can hold on to that seed and it won't grow, it would be the same as not taking our lives to the fullest potential, living into our true selves and tapping into the life that God intended us to have. Holding on to the life that is comfortable and safe and easy, is that truly seeing Jesus? Seeing Jesus means dying to all parts of our life that blind us, that give us fear, that need to be right and to be in control, that give us anger and resentment, the guilt, the disappointments of our past, the attachment to power, wealth, reputation, the ways in which we separate ourselves from one another, our obsessions, our compulsions, our personal agendas, the ways in which we hurt one another and damage relationships. Ultimately, it means dying to our own self-sufficiency. We let go of our life to receive God's life. This work of dying, seed planting, is difficult and painful when we are the seeds. It is, as Jesus describes, soul troubling. He says, "I am shaken," as it shakes us to our core. But dying is not the end. When one season of our life dies, when we make the necessary pivot in our lives to live out the way God intended, it's more of a transformation. Now, how does transformation happen? Through releasing that tight grip of our life and letting it go. Reckless in our love. Now, I get the word reckless has some negative connotation to it, but the word itself is not a negative word. It just depends on how you use it. According to Webster's dictionary, reckless means a person or their actions without thinking or caring about the consequences of their action. Well, okay, I can see how that could be a bad word if you're referring to reckless driving, because that could harm someone else or could harm you or other people. Drinking or using substance recklessly, that's also probably not great. There's a high probability of you harming yourself or others. But loving recklessly, loving freely, loving without weighing all the consequences, loving without making a pros and cons list, loving in a way that says, "I don't care about the cost, I am all in and I'm committed to this love." Man, I wish that we had some type of example in our lives to know what that type of love looks like. Wait a minute, we do. God's love for the world is reckless. God is all in and committed to this love to each and every one of us. There's actually a really lovely worship song called Reckless Love that we get to sing today. Thank you, Emily and Mandela, for learning the song. Isn't that wonderful? It's a good reminder of all the ways God's vast love goes beyond what a person can ask for. The bridge in the song is my favorite part, and I'll just say those lines. There's no shadow you won't light up, no mountain you won't climb up coming after me. There's no wall you won't kick down, lie you won't tear down coming after me. Oh, it is so good to know that type of love. And if you're not familiar with the song, I hope that in this time of worship that we're going to have in a few minutes, that you can let those lyrics of the song just soak over you and you take in that truth and love that you are deeply, recklessly loved. God's love is intense. It's miraculous. The fact that there is not a thing we can do to lose an ounce of that love or to gain an ounce of that love, that is reckless. To grasp how wide and long and high and deep is the love of Christ and to know this love that surpasses knowledge. How do we love our lives in that way? The first step is a lot of surrendering. As I'm sure you're already aware, today is St. Patrick's Day. And St. Patrick was a real person. At the age of 16, he was kidnapped from his home and taken to Ireland, where he was sold as a slave and forced to herd livestock. After 6 years of slavery, Patrick escaped to Britain. Because he had believed that God's hand was in this all, Patrick devoted his life to ministry. While studying for the priesthood, he experienced reoccurring dreams in which he heard voices that said, "O holy youth, come back and walk once more among us." He convinced his supervisors to let him return to Ireland in 432. Not to seek revenge for injustice, but to seek reconciliation and to spread the faith. Over the next 30 years, Patrick established churches and communities, monastery communities all across Ireland. Man, looks like we have two solid examples of some radical, relentless, and reckless love. Now, how do we love our lives that way? As I said, it takes a lot of steps of surrender. We love our power and our control, and if someone or something wants to take any part of that away, especially in regards to affecting our lives, we're probably going to be on the defense a little bit. Some of us wrestle with control and power for various reasons. For me personally, it's a bit of a trauma response. The more I can control the narrative of my life, the more I can control my pain and my grief. And at least that's what I've been telling my brain all of these years. So I don't know what it is for you, that's what it is for me. But having this control and gripping our life so tightly, we miss the bigger picture. We miss seeing Jesus. To love our lives recklessly is to set our lives free. Free from our agendas and power, embracing the mystery of the unknown. To surrender from being an individual grain of wheat that we can control, letting go of our own individualism that our society is obsessed with, to letting that die, to be buried, and then to sprout up to live for others in community, to surrender comfortability, to relentlessly looking out for others' best interest rather than our own. To love others without expecting anything in return. To wake up every morning and commit saying, God, here I am, my life is in your hands, and may your will be done and not my own. That is being reckless in your love. Beloved, you are recklessly loved. And my prayer and hope for you is that when you see Jesus, you are compelled to let go and be reckless in your love in the world. Amen.